You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome along to our live Twitter space for tonight's Between the Stripes LOI podcast, Series 6. Episode 12 of the pod coming your way. It's myself, Kieran Burke, hosting the show. And I'm delighted to say back from Germany is Gary Riley. We're going to kickstart things now on the show. Gary, let yourself in.
How are you, Kieran? Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, good to hear you, Gaz. How was the trip in Germany, first of all?
Oh, it was great. Well tired now, but a great few days of football. Got to see a couple of Bundesliga games and a Regionella game as well, so...
I'm particularly interested to know Dusseldorf's reserve team. You went to see them. How do they stack up? Where would they fit into the whole League of Ireland picture? I'm eager to know.
I was actually talking to a supporter there. There was quite a few at the game. There was like 1,300 at the game. Wow. And that was on. It was like at 2 o'clock on Friday. but I think what was happening was that their senior team was playing in the after or that evening, so people had taken a day off work to go to the underage. It's like a reserve game, and then we're heading down to the away game. I can't remember where it was, but
that's interesting actually, because I remember when we had Conor Hoey on the show one of the times, he was kind of campaigning for that. The League of Ireland, it needs to become more of a full day type thing, that the underage teams maybe should play earlier in the day. Mm. All at the one ground, maybe on different pitches, and it all builds up to the big game. So it's not just one match, it's kind of a big event. So it's interesting that's the way they kind of do things in Germany.
Well, I'm not sure how by design it was in this particular case, but right, it's just the way it worked for that particular shop I was chatting to. But I know really that in particular, like, it's very small setup, very like League of Ireland. You walk in a big gate and you show your ticket, and you know, you go over and get your beer and your bratwurst or whatever and plow on. You know, it's very you know, it's not, no, there was body searches and stuff like that, but nothing crazy like you could. It was actually very like Bose. You had to, when the players were coming out onto the pitch, like a tunnel came out so you couldn't walk across. So it was very, you know, intimate, let's say. But it was really good, very good experience, very friendly fans and stuff like that.
Yeah, sorry, I just lost you for a second there, Gary, so apologies if I do ask the same question again, but I know last week on the show we were eager to see what the food offerings would be like at these games. How was that?
It was very good, particularly for, I went to Dortmund on Saturday. I want to give a shout out to Maxi for helping me with tickets.
Some game too, was it?
Yeah, it was a great game. I think, I went to Dortmund years ago, and you know, it's easy to follow Dortmund. You know, they're a big team in Germany. They're not exactly unheard of. But I found, like at the end of the game, most people will be familiar with the yellow wall, the ultras, in Dortmund, and you know, the players just stood in front of them for a couple of minutes and listened to the shite from the crowd. It wasn't very nice to be there, if you're a genuine, you know, I'm only a tourist, like, but the Bochum fans were great. They were singing the whole game, and particularly we stayed in Dusseldorf, so when we were getting the train across to Dortmund, just want to highlight, we were coming from Dusseldorf to Dortmund. Train travel was free because we were going to a game. Wow. That day.
Wow, great.
So that included, if we needed to get a bus or whatever, all included in your ticket. Really helps the movement of people, which was fantastic. The trains are obviously rammed and stuff like that, but it was a great experience. Very, very positive atmosphere. There was no grief between fans or anything like that. Everyone mixing, no issues whatsoever. And then Monday, I went to Borussia Mönchengladbach. They were playing Leipzig, and Leipzig needed to win to get into the Champions League spots, but that didn't work out for them. Borussia Mönchengladbach were very, very good on the night. Great little stadium, and they don't really have great rail connections to the stadium, so they put on shuttle buses. So yeah, and like endless shuttle buses, like when we probably got on the, I'd say 10 or 15 buses had already left. And when we were getting on, there's probably five or six buses waiting to pick up more of the crowd. Like, it's, they know what they're at, like, do you know what I mean? So
yeah. Yeah, I see James Donnelly is listening. James, we need to shut the buses out to Bishopsgate. So that's the main takeaway from Gary's trip to Germany. But look, we've got a lot to get through on the show. Great to have Gary back. But last week on the show, I'm sure many of you heard our interview with Mark Tighe. I know it was very, very popular. So we're going to have a quick chat about that at the start of the show. Just the main takeaways from that interview with Mark. And we've got a lot of other hot topics, obviously, we're going to touch on. We will talk about Stephen Bradley and the link with Lincoln City at the moment. We'll talk about the incident involving Pat Devlin down in Bray and all the other hot topics from the weekend. And of course, we'll look back at all the games as well. And we'll look ahead to this weekend's games, but we very much do want your input during the show. So don't be afraid to hit the request button and have your say on this week's podcast, or you can send us a tweet either. I've got the laptop here in front of me, so I'll see any tweets coming through. But Gary, great interview with Mark Tighe last week. It was great to have him on. Me and you, we've talked about a lot on this show. We've been questioning, are we seeing enough cultural change, enough change in the way of thinking, the way of doing things? It was very disappointing. That one of the main things I took away is very disappointing for Mark to hear Mark say that a lot of the issues that plagued the FAI last time under Delaney, in terms of the actual staff, office staff and the likes, that they are still airing the same concerns, and their concerns don't seem to be going anywhere.
Yeah, it's very frustrating, of course. I'm not sure if it's surprising to hear. Certainly looking from the outside, the setup with Jonathan Hill not being in the country doesn't really make a bag of sense. And it's surprising to hear that so many of the staff within the organisation are still quite, you know, disappointed with that. You know, you'd imagine that, like, how many boots on the ground would have direct interactions with the CEO? Probably not that many, but, you know, they're still bothered by that, which is obviously quite disappointing. I think I've said it multiple times, even said it to Mark. It's concerning that Roy Barrett just said this is a non-issue, and that's kind of the end of it. That's kind of like what we used to hear years ago. We're telling you what's the story, and then
as Mark said himself, that's just simply not the case from what he's hearing on the ground.
Yeah, 100%. And when you even look at, like, you know, he mentioned SIP2 as well, and the staff that they represent, like, that's also a concern as well. So I think Mark highlighted that it's going to be a while yet before things happen, but I would have expected a bit more change. Even you mentioned to him, like, when the international team were playing and only the first division were playing, they didn't send out any notification as to who has been suspended or whatever.
Yeah, look, the club's probably get, but the regular media update certainly didn't go out. So we're talking about a Euro 2028 bid, and we can't get basic things like that right. It's quite concerning going forward.
Oh, 100%. If they don't, like, I've been quite critical of the Euro 2028 bid. I don't really see how this can really work, considering the state of the organisation at the moment. So I think a lot more needs to be done, cleaning out the house before we can look to any major projects like that. But the other thing is, and you mentioned it to Mark too, the amount of resources, time and effort that's going to take is going to come at the cost of everything else. And there isn't, everything else isn't in a good enough state at the moment for that to work. So unfortunately, I think the FAI, more needs to be done in the change of their outlook and approach to the game in the country.
Of course, there was a little bit of positive news last night from the FAI that they found a new associate partner of the League of Ireland. I'm not exactly sure how that's going to work. We'll find out more Thursday when they launch that. And it seems they have a new partner as well for the highlight show. So they've done well there. They're still, though, without a national team sponsor. And still very, very little detail on the proposed third tier as well. So there's a lot of work for the FAI to do. I think we'll move on, though, Gary. We're going to be talking about, as I said, Stephen Bradley later in the show. We'll talk about Bray Wanderers as well. But we'll get stuck into the first division games to start with. And again, listeners, as we're going through these, if you're at any of these games, if you have something to say, hit the request button and come on the show with us. We'll just fly through the Friday results, and then we'll look at Monday's results, and we'll just talk in general about what the two sets of results meant for each club. But it was Bray 1, Cove 1 on the Friday night. Athlone were beaten 3-0 against Wexford. Cork, they beat Longford by 4-2. I was at that one. Longford went one up. They were playing all the football in the first half. They score a silly own goal before half time. They don't take their chances at the start of the second half. And unfortunately, they were punished. And it was a similar enough story in Galway on Monday. Speaking of Galway, they came from behind. What a game that was. 2-0 down against Treaty. They came back to win 3-2 with a flurry of late goals. Then on Monday, Waterford, they had a man sent off after 44 minutes. Gary Taylor was sent off, but they managed to grind out a 1-0 win against Athlone, bitten with the goal there for Waterford. Cork hammered Treaty 3-0. Not the first time Treaty have folded against Cork this season. Galway, they beat Longford Town by 2-0. Again, Longford in the first half could have been 3 or 4 up at the break. They didn't take their chances and they paid for it in the second half. And Wexford 1-1. That's a game that made headlines for obvious reasons. But we'll start with that Waterford at Lone one, Gary. Taylor sent off. I'm surprised he's still getting a game, to be honest. The few Waterford games I've seen this year, he has looked well out of his depth. But Bitten has been a really good addition for them and he gets an important goal. But far from a convincing performance. And we talked about it last week on the show, didn't we, with Waterford. Very little talk about the manager situation there at the moment. It's all gone quiet.
Yes, well, starting with the manager situation, it has gone very quiet, all right. I was expecting to hear a bit more news on that front, but doesn't seem to be much coming. I don't even hear many rumours or anything like that at the moment. It seems to be quite quiet, which is quite strange. But look, they're, you know, they had a good result. I know it's only against Athlone. Like, you need to be winning those games if you want to get out of this league. But to have a man sent off and to win the game as well, I know it's at home too, but a great positive for the current. I think they're... Is it confirmed that they're just an interim setup at the moment?
Well, it was just announced that they would take charge of the next game after Ian Morris left. So it's been no update since then that I'm aware of.
Yeah, that's a bit strange. Like, you know, are they going to stick with that for a little while?
I'd wonder, is it something to do with the season in England coming towards its conclusion? I wouldn't be at all surprised if Richard Forrest is looking across the water again for a manager.
Well, look, with Stephen Bradley looking further afield, maybe he could entice him down to the RSC. A big job.
Of course, Athlone still without a manager as well. I know there was reports linking Kilduff and Shepherd with the job either individually or maybe on a co-basis, which would be very, very interesting. But two clubs without a manager there. Cork 3, Treaty 0, Keaton Healy, Bargery with the goals there. They're flying at the moment, Cork. I wasn't that impressed with them Turner's Cross on Friday, but they're very, very efficient and clinical, and that's why they find themselves top of the league. Galway Longford, I was at this one. As I said, Longford played brilliant football in the first half. Should have been 3 or 4 up. Conor Kearns made some brilliant saves, but didn't take their chances to give away a stupid penalty start of the second half, and then again a set piece. So, look, I know you were very adamant. You were backing Longford to win the league, and imagine now, what, are they 11 behind Cork? You must be giving up on those hopes already.
Yeah, I think this weekend was key for Longford Town. Unfortunately, yeah. Well, it was key before it, and now it's been extremely damaging. No points from two games against your challengers,
and just one from the last nine.
Yeah. Look, it's very disappointing. I was watching the game over in Dusseldorf on Friday. I didn't bother with the Galway game because it's on Pixalot. But yeah, look. Very disappointing stuff from a town perspective, particularly to go one up in Cork and then to not only score an own goal when there was no real danger there, probably poor communication in around the defence.
They probably committed too many bodies forward as well. They're looking for a second before half time. I think if they could have that moment back, they would have just sat in and seen out the half.
Yeah, probably so. But I think probably the other key moment in the game was Eric Malloy and Sam Verdon conspired against each other to put the ball wide. But look, it's disappointing from a town perspective. I think
they just haven't been clinical enough this season. I've taken flack for saying this, but I after seeing the two games again over the last couple of days, I'm more adamant than ever on this. Longford Town by far and away are the best footballing team in the division. They're one of the few teams that get it down, pass the ball, but they're not creating enough raw chances off that, and the chances they are creating, they're not taking. So it's lovely playing all this great stuff, but Galway, I mean, in that first half the other day, I was absolutely appalled by the football Galway were playing. Look, it came as no surprise, but there was there didn't seem to be any real game plan. It was literally just lump the ball up the pitch and try and hope for a mistake. And Longford looked very, very comfortable. It was only in the second half then when they gave away the penalty and obviously the set piece. But, I mean, I couldn't be looking at that style of football every week. But Galway are getting the results. Cork are getting the results as well. I think with Cork, I think their individual talents, the likes of Healy there, he has been given more freedom to play and go and express himself than the Galway players. Because Galway undoubtedly had good players, but they're extremely shackled. They're really stuck to a rigid system there. And I would much rather watch Cork, because at least I know their individual flair players are going to be allowed to have that bit of freedom, whereas I don't see that with Galway. So for me, I could probably swallow losing to Cork the other night because, look, they're at home at Turner's Cross, but Longford should never be losing that game to Galway. That was a really, really damaging one to take.
No, it definitely was. Like, I was... I couldn't believe that... Like, Longford Town played all the football. You said to me there that Longford were playing Cork into outer space in the first half last Friday. And, look, I was watching the stream. No replays in that stream. What's that about?
Yeah, I don't know. There was a lot of complaints about it, but look, we won't get into that. Everyone's trying
their best. And he could, like me, can do no replay, boys. Get it together. But I just thought... I just couldn't believe that the way the game went, that Longford ended up losing that game so heavily. It wasn't a 4-1 game, probably.
No, never.
But Cork probably deserved to win that game.
Took their chances, they were clinical.
Yeah, exactly, but it goes back to, I think you said last week, Longford had 500 passes in the game.
Yeah, against Treaty, and no goals.
Yeah, but no goals.
Yeah, yeah. You have to be willing to mix it up. You have to be willing to mix it up a bit more. Look, we're championing this great football that Longford are playing. It's wonderful. I never want to see them go the complete opposite direction towards the football Galway are playing. But there needs to be a balance. I don't feel they're striking that at the moment. But look, if Conor Kearns didn't decide to have the game of his life today, we're talking about Longford winning that game in Galway. We're probably not having this discussion. But look, Wexford won, Bray won. That was obviously the big talking point from the weekend. Ben Feeney gave Bray the lead. Harry Groom got the equaliser for Wexford. Bray missed a late penalty. And then we see all the videos coming out of Ferry Carrick Park involving Pat Devlin and the Bray fans. Look, we weren't there. We don't really know what happened. There's been reports that there was some very unsavoury chanting from some sections of the Bray fan. Perhaps Pat Devlin is reacting to that. I think he'd admit himself he definitely didn't handle the situation very well. There's a couple of items then thrown from the crowd as well, which is very, very poor as well from the supporters' point of view. So there's definitely faults on both ends here. But for me, the biggest issue here is that happened on Monday, that incident. We're now speaking on Wednesday evening. There's been absolutely no press statement, release, anything from the club. They've turned off all their comments on social media. That had already happened before this incident. To me, that's absolutely ridiculous for a League of Ireland club to be conducting themselves like that. But surely the club had to come out with some statement, even if it was to defend the manager. I'd rather they come out with that than just total radio silence and blocking off all comments from supporters on social media. I think the club really need to have a good hard look at themselves, but they don't really seem to care, Gary. So I'm not sure they'll be too worried with that criticism, in all honesty.
The whole thing was bizarre, wasn't it? Like, it was hard to believe that this is actually going on. Pat Devlin calling down lads. He wasn't going to have a deep discussion about the style of football or the results that were going to be that were on. Like, it was going to be a scrap of some description. I obviously don't know that, but it wasn't the greatest of situations
to find yourself in.
No, exactly. Mm. But I think Pat Devlin, he should have a lot more cop. He's a long time looking at this game in this country at different levels. He needs to have a bit of a thicker skin here. I'm not saying that the abuse or whatever it was being leveled at him is correct or right or anything like that.
Yeah, there's a way to deal with that as well. Someone from the club could have been sent over there to document what was being said, what was happening. You don't go and try and he's left the field of play and he's actually going up the steps, only for a steward pushes him back. So again, look, we've talked about this on last week's show, behaviour of technical staff on the sideline. It's not been clamped down hard enough. Surely the FAI has to look at that incident and say, lads, this isn't a good image, not only for yourselves, it's not a great image for the league. Surely there should be some sort of repercussions there.
Yeah, 100%. But
I mean, it's a very different, extreme different example, but I think back to Eric Dier leaving the pitch and actually climbing into the stand at a Tottenham game. He got hit with a 4 or 5 game ban. Now, again, he didn't come to blows with anyone, but it just didn't look good.
He should have got a 4 or 5 month ban. Like for that, yeah. that was a scandal.
But again, Pat Devlin has left the field to play. Anyone that's familiar with Wexford as well, there's like a little fence there, isn't it, at the end of the pitch? Mm. So he's even gone beyond that. He's basically in where the fans are. And again, only for the steward intervening, God knows what might have transpired there. But you know, he's left the field to play. He's put himself in that position.
Yeah, but
I think there needs to be a serious review of what happened there.
If you're, I would say that he's the instigator. No matter what the boys were saying in the crowd. But he left the field of play. He went into the fans' domain, to get involved here. It's truly amazing that actually occurred.
And as I said, there's ways to deal with that. That even someone could have gone over to the stewards. Can you please document what's been said, what's happening, even record it, whatever. But for Pat Devlin to go over with his own mobile phone and start recording and think he wasn't going to get a reaction. Now again, the reaction isn't right to see objects been thrown and. Some of the chants that we've been told may have been said down there aren't right either, and there needs to be consequences for those people as well. But the entire incident, really, really shameful stuff. And I think if Bray aren't going to deal with it themselves, then higher up the FAI have to look at that and say, lads, this is not a good image for the league, not a good image for yourselves. We're going to have a chat about what happened here.
100%, but I think the most concerning thing is Bray haven't said anything. And this happened on Monday evening. So, the fact that they haven't addressed that their manager went up to interact, let's say, with his with Bray's own fans who made the journey to Wexford, says a lot about the state of the club internally at the moment, turning off comments and stuff like that. I think someone mentioned as well that they were very late to say they're selling tickets now at the moment for the game on Friday.
I was just about to check that because earlier in the day they weren't available. They're available now at the moment. But I mean, the whole episode is bizarre. Look, I think we discussed on the show before we weren't that keen on the takeover. Really, it's obvious the Bray fans weren't keen on it either. I just think from minute one it's been a disaster. Their PR, their public relations has been absolutely amateur stuff. Turning off comments now is the latest low in that. They just don't seem to have made any attempt really to build a relationship with the fans that were already there. And I'd say the atmosphere could be quite toxic on Friday night when Waterford come to town.
Oh, 100%. It's not going to be a nice place to be. But look, this is, you know, they kind of made this situation for themselves and they haven't done enough to rectify it. So I think I'm not sure if it'll get worse. This is a fairly big low point at the moment, but... It's probably going to get worse before it gets better, I'm afraid.
If there is any Bray fans listening in, feel free to get in touch. But we'll move on to the Premier Division games from the weekend. Of course, we'll be speaking
Just on that, it'd be interesting to hear from a Bray fan. It's easy for... it seems to be so much hatred, not just dislike for Pat Devlin from a group of the Bray fans.
A man that would have been viewed as a legend prior to his arrival at Bray as well for what he'd done before, keeping them in the division year after year. Of course, at Longford Town's expense 1 year back in 2013 in the playoff finally kept Bray up. So, it really has taken a sharp turn, but it's been building and building and I think that was the byproduct of it at the weekend. Things just really came to a boil and, as you said, Friday... It might not be a nice place to be, the Carlisle ground. We'll move on to the Premier Division results from the weekend. And Pats took a right hammer in Gary, 4-0 against Derry. It would have been extra painful for them to see Matthew Smith on the scoreline or on the score sheet. McGonigal, he continues his great scoring streak with a couple, and Dunmigan with a nice goal as well. But what a statement from Derry. But is there a bit of pressure already starting to come on Tim Clancy?
Oh, yeah, I think we said as much last week. I'm not really sure... You know, there's a definite stagnation here. Like a 4-0 hammer, it is a hammer in their home. There's no doubt about it. I'm not really sure was there anyone that can say that they had a good game from a Pats perspective last week?
I think we both predicted that this would be quite a tight game. Just looking back at last week's predictions, we both went 2-1 to Derry, and I actually think I said that I wouldn't be surprised if it was a late goal. So for Derry to go to Richmond Park and win so comprehensively, you've got to be worried as a Pats fan.
Oh, you do, and you know where they are, where their position at the moment is not good. Like we were talking about the way Sligo Rovers were playing. You know, they've seemed to got out of that rut for the time being, anyway. But they're in fourth now. Dundalk are in third. St. Pat's are going to be just in mid-table, the abyss of the mid-table. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're not moving on. I know they lost some players and stuff like that, but there doesn't seem to be any progression on from last year at all. Take the result in the FA Cup final. Obviously, great to do that, but where is the next step? It's going to be interesting to see what type of reaction Tim Clancy can get in the next game for them, because you know, that's going to be a difficult game on Friday against Drogheda.
Yeah, and look, there's been Pats fans kind of early on this season, they've been making suggestions they're not overly happy with the style of play either. Just looking at the record here, they've only scored 15 and 13, which is the biggest surprise, because all the pre-season podcasts we done, we were talking about Pats, that they'd definitely be the highest scoring team in the division. They'd be this goal machine that might leak a lot. Defensively, they haven't been that bad, only conceded 12 and 13, but they're just not getting the goals returned that we would have expected them. When you're backed as well in the transfer market with the likes of Owen Doyle, with Olabi, who we haven't seen a huge pile of, but he came in, Mark Doyle came in. When you're backed with players like that, the pressure is on and they're not delivering at the moment. So it is easy to see why that discontent is setting in already.
Oh, it is, yeah, 100%. I think, particularly with the style of football, you know, I'm not sure. Would it be fair to say it's taken a nosedive from last year? Probably a bit strong of a word. Probably a bit strong of a word to use, nosedive, but certainly not what they became accustomed to over the last year or so. So particularly with Owen Doyle coming in, like, there would have been a lot of excitement, even as you said, from us. Would have been great to see him coming in and banging in goals. He hasn't scored that many, and I don't think that's necessarily his fault. I think it's down to the approach to the game and the style of football they're playing.
There is some reports suggesting that Alfie Lewis, who was on loan there last year, that he might be set for a return in the summer window. So that would definitely bolster their midfield options. But I think a very disappointing start to the season for Pats. Great win for Derry, though. They're absolutely flying. We've had a tweet in here from, just very quickly, I think it is. Is it a Bray fan that's tweeted us in here? Yeah, Bray fan has said, fair play to Between the Stripes for calling out Bray Wanderers about how bad a run club it is at the moment. I think, Andrew, you're trying to get us in a bit of bother. I don't think we've called out Bray at all. I'd say we probably, I don't think either of us would be too happy with the restriction of the comments. I think that's really poor stuff, so maybe we're calling them out on that. But look, as I said, we weren't in Wexford at the weekend, so we don't know what led to that incident involving Pat Devlin, but I definitely think it's something that needs to be reviewed. And I think the biggest issue I take with it is what's followed, the total lack of a reaction or public statement from the club. That would be my biggest issue there. But
I would agree with you that is a huge issue. The fact that that hasn't been addressed in any way at all, I think that indicates that the club behind the scenes isn't exactly being ran fantastically. I don't think that's up for debate, really. Like, to have your manager, like, he wasn't going to chat about tactics, you know, up into the crowd. But this wasn't an exchange of ideas. This was not going to be a pretty event. So for the club not to deal with that in any way, shape or form and just plough on to the next one as if it never happened, that's not good, to say the least.
As I said, their public image just it hasn't done it any good. And look, you see other fans, you see this jibe all the time of North Korea. I mean, if I was involved with Longford Town, which I am, if I was involved there and I seen other fans saying these things, I'd be saying to the club, like, where are we going wrong? Why do people have this perception of us? Whereas at Bray, they're almost playing into that perception by blocking the comments online. I really would have an issue with that. I think fans have to be allowed their opinion. It's clear they're not being allowed that opinion at the moment at Bray. So, look, you can say we're calling them out. I don't think we are. We're having a fair and honest discussion. If people want to take issue with that, that's up to them. But we call it as we see it here on the show. We'll never not have our honest opinion aired. That's what we're all about. So
some Bray fans might remember in the days when foot.ie was ploughing along nicely. I know it's a bit of a quieter place usually. I believe there was an issue with Bray as well on foot.ie.
Was, yeah. They had to stop referring to the club name.
Yeah,
at all,
and they had
yeah.
to remove all the posts referring to Bray and the sub forums and everything like that. So,
yeah. Now, look, obviously, that was the old Bray, so to speak. So
I understand, but it's interesting that, you know, they seem to have very close similarities.
Where were we? We were on Pat's Derry, so we've covered that. We'll move on. Bose 3, UCD 0. You would say the perfect response, but this was hairy enough at times for Bose. UCD missed a great chance to go one up in the game, and maybe if they had taken that, you never know what might have happened. But they survived that moment, and then Junior scored again, and he's been on a good little run of late. Dawson Devoy scored from the spot, and Promise, good to see him on the score sheet again. He's been on the bench a late, but he got a goal here, and that'll do his confidence the world of good. But a much-needed 3-0 win for Bose against UCD. But does it change a lot of Bose, really? They've got Derry up next. I suppose that'll be the real test for them.
Oh, yeah. I'm not really sure how... Like, excuse me. The Junior's opener was spilled from Heaney, and he just got onto the end of it and tapped it in. I'm not really sure if that was a penalty. I think there was a tackle on Promise, I think. The penalty that Devoy scored, I'm not really sure if that was a penalty. I had a good few looks at it there.
Yeah, they got the rub of the green a few times in this game. Yeah. Right? As I said, missed chances for UCD and maybe a couple of decisions going their way and a couple of mistakes from UCD. But look, if Bose go and get hammered against Derry, no one's going to turn around and say, oh, it's okay, we bet UCD last week. You know, the pressure is very much still on this Bose team to string together a good sequence of results. UCD, we say it every week on the show, very similar to Longford Town last season. They show a lot of promise in games, and then it's an individual error or just a lack of, you know, something doesn't go their way, and then they take a bit of a tank, and they've just been uncompetitive so far this season. It's a real shame. It's hard to see that change in either as the year goes on. This was some game. Sligo won, Shamrock Rovers won. Again, I think a lot of people spoke about the pitch maybe having an impact on this game. It certainly wouldn't have suited Shamrock Rovers. Andy Lyons, what a season he's having. He's been a brilliant signing. I think Rovers are probably, they've got an even better player than they thought they'd probably signed. Jordan Hamilton with the equaliser for Sligo. And then Gary Buckley sent late off, but it was only about 4 or 5 minutes to go at that stage, so Shamrock Rovers weren't able to make any further gains. But with Derry winning on the road, then Shamrock Rovers be looking at this as a drop 2 points.
Yeah, probably, but I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's not the end of the world. A 1-1 draw down in Sligo, I think they would have taken that at the start of the game. I feel like with the news about Bradley, I was kind of thinking about Shamrock Rovers, like, who did they get in? What changes? How big of an impact that would be?
Put that on ice for a second. We're going to talk Bradley next. We've got a Pats fan, Thomas, that wants to get in and have a chat with us. So we're going to let Thomas in. Thomas, if you want to unmute.
Hey, Tommy.
How are you, lads? Can you hear me there?
Yeah, how are you, Thomas? You all right?
I was trying to get in at the when you were talking about the Derry game. And sorry to force the bubble there on any Rovers fans that want to get in.
No. go ahead. Give us your thoughts.
Sorry, I actually missed just a couple of what the lads were saying. But just I was at the game. And I'm kind of looking at the game as a massive, massive turning point in not only Pat's season, but I think the middle of the table season. We were all reading beforehand how Pat's, you know, I'm an avid Pat's fan, you know, we're talking about league titles, we're talking about, you know, and I think last couple of weeks ago in the pod, I think it was yourself, Gary, you made a great point about, you know, Pat's finished second last season and won the cup. Like, where do we go from here? But I think our next game now, we're playing Drogheda away, and then we're playing Derry again up there. If this is not a wake-up call for Tim Clancy, I don't really know where it goes. Like, how the decision to go 3-5-2 is just insane. It was doing both his players and the fans absolutely no justice. I couldn't fathom it. I saw the team sheet and I went, that's the bank holiday round. You know, we made Derry, and Derry are a fantastic football team. They're a fantastic football and outfit, and all credit to them. Like, really, all credit to them. But we made them look like you know, we made them look like a prime Barcelona. There was just nothing, like, you know, like Matty Smith, a player that we were devastated to lose, was unbelievable. Brandon Kavanagh just was sensational on the ball. But again, there was nothing. It was boys against men. Like, it was, it could have been 6-0. And it's really a wake up call, I think. I think, you know, going into the season, you know, we opened the season with beating Shelbourne 3-0. Like, we're 2 points off Bowes. And, like, Kieran, you were just saying yourself, you know, Bowes, it comes down to, you know, bad management. I think the same is applied to Pats. Like, Pats don't know how to draw again. We have five losses, I think, on the season. We've lost, if you look at that middle bunch of teams, we've lost amount of games. I think more than, I think the next one up is, don't call me this now, but I think the next one up is Shells or something like that. We've lost an incredible amount of games. And I just think it does come down to man management. It comes down to setting up your players for man management. Like, we went into the half 3-0 and changed nothing. It was 3-5-2 still. And you're looking at it going, you know, I just didn't understand it. And I just think that looking back on the season, I think this will be a huge turning point for Pats now. I think whether we push on or whether we just continue to fall, I think that game against Derry is a pivotal moment of the season.
Yeah, great analysis, Thomas. Thanks for coming. I'll let you in a second, Gary. Just to ask you, Thomas, you mentioned there the Tim Clancy has switched to 3-5-2 recently. We've been speaking on the show, obviously, that you're not scoring enough goals, not creating maybe as many chances as we would have expected. So do you feel Tim was looking to try and get more players up on the other end of the pitch, two strikers up there, but he's probably picked the wrong game to go and try that?
Like, I mean, you're talking two strikers. Like, Owen Doyle's been playing corner forward, like, to use a guard term, you know what I mean? He's trying so hard to drop wide, and then he turns around and there's nothing in front of him. Like,
yeah, I've heard that a lot from Pats fans.
I mean, the 3-5-2, it wasn't really a 3-5-2. It was more of a mad... Like, you'd Anthony Breslin. Like, Anthony Breslin would let a bus pass him if he was late for work. Like, it's just, he does not like to go forward. He's not that type of player. And then the service to both Billy King and Dara was just, I think Billy King and Dara Burns are a lot of the same player. And he had both of them out on the left. Like, Billy didn't know how to drop into the pocket. It was stuff like that. And I think, you know, it's just, like you said, we haven't scored enough goals. But I don't think that changing to a 3-5-2 against top of the league was going to solve that issue. Like,
it's interesting that you referenced man management there, and I hear you talking about Anto Breslin saying that he's not getting forward. Well, for me, as someone that's seen a hell of a lot of Anto Breslin, and I know that was in the first division with Longford, but I've tracked him since he left, obviously, because he was a player I really, really liked and thought that after a season or two in the Premier, he'd probably move back across to England. That's how highly I view him.
Yeah.
It's interesting to hear you saying that he's not getting forward. For me, that would have to be an instruction given to him, because anytime I seen him, he was a great bomb forward fullback, and he's got a wand of a left peg as well. So he's a player that can put in good crosses.
Kieran, you took the word straight out of my mouth, and that's why I was saying it. That's why I was saying, you know, there has to be an instruction, because, like, you look at, like, Pats' entire back line at the start of the season, didn't know how to move the ball forward, didn't know how to pass. So it has to come down to instruction. And I think, you know, it's more of a, I don't know what it is. Like, you look at, like, Giff Forrester, who obviously, like, we all know what Giff can do. We all know he can do. And he's trying to play almost quarterback. And he's trying to play, you know, to come in, drop deep, move around. But it's as if, you know, with such a young midfield outfit and such a young centre-backs and full-backs, that they're almost trying to, you know, like, get the ball to Giff and then get the ball. They don't really know initiative, so to speak. And that's why I think it comes down to man management. Like, we have the players there that are at both, you know, championship clubs and premiership clubs on loan that are obviously there for a reason. I just think it comes down, and I can only say this now because we're so many games into the season, that there's a specific playing style that exists at Pats that came with Clancy. And that's what those players are following. And I don't think you can blame the players here at that. I think it does fall onto the lap of the manager. Like, you know, like, you look at Dundalk, like, I know I'm getting a bit out of, you know, topic here with the Derry game. That Dundalk game should have been put to bed. Dundalk are a horrible outfit. I think, if I'm right now, are Dundalk 2 points off us? So you talk,
I think they're one ahead.
One point ahead. So you talk about Dundalk having an awful season, Bowes being mismanaged, you know, Sligo not being able to win at home. But yet, you know, there's still a narrative that exists around Pats that, when the cup starts, sure, we'll win that. We've Europe, sure. You know, you have to be realistic with this, that, you know, we have a lot of games coming up that it really will fall down to man management and individual performances. At the moment, I don't think we're getting both. And it is...
Do you think, you mentioned Europe there, Thomas, do you think, like, are you more concerned with every passing game that that's going to be a total mess?
I mean, I'm delighted that the coefficient now bumped us up and we're getting a bit of money out of the first round. Like, I just think that in European nights and what's there, it's so evident that the fact that, you know, you need to go into Europe knowing your best team. You know, you need to go in knowing you have a solid unit and a solid way of playing. Like, you know, Rovers are a completely different side in Europe than they are in the league. And it's because they know how to beat teams on the road. They know how to, you know, like, look at Bohemian. Bohemian Football Club last year had an incredible run in the Aviva. And I watched every game that Bowes played. And they had a specific playing style of this is how we're going to break teams down. I just can't see Pats doing that. Like, especially with, like, I think the average age of, if you take Forrester out, is the average age of Pats' midfield, it must be about, I don't know, 21 or 22. Like, you know, you've Ben McCormick, fantastic talent. You've Adam O'Reilly, fantastic talent. Are they going to win your games in Europe? Are they going to take the ball by the scruff of the neck? Like, you look at Derry's midfield, it was boys against men, you know. And well, yeah, look, I'm optimistic. I am optimistic about it. I still believe that the core of the players that had that fantastic season last year are there. I just think that something has to maybe change a bit more in terms of style, man management. And like you said, like draws in Europe are huge, especially away from home. You don't want to be, you know, win or lose every match in Europe, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it's a good question, Gary. Actually, you never really, yeah.
Yeah, I know you have like league games coming up and stuff like that, but it's just, you know, like with the success of the winning the cup last year and getting into Europe, I get a surely disappointing that the league form has been such that what about Europe now? Like, what is that going to be, a total shit show as well?
Exactly, like, and I think that, you know, there's always that concern. Like, you know, I remember leaving the match after the 4-0. One of the biggest concerns was, Jesus, you know, we've had such great crowds that kills crowds, you know, like we're playing them again, what, on Monday coming? And it's like, you know, will there be an away crowd to go to that, you know, and stuff like that. But yeah, no, it really does play in the back of your mind, like, because, like, let's call a spade, like, you know, Pats, we need that European money. So the further we can get in it, the more beneficial it will be to the club and the more you can give back to the fans who are going out. Like, you know, Richmond was rocking before the 4-0. And I know it'll be rocking again and I know it'll be back. It's just, it'd be great now to, you know, see that results come our way again. And I just think that the man that this needs to fall to at the end of the day is Clancy. And I just think that, and that's from being like at every match and watching the game and watching the style of football, you know, it's let's play like this, no plan B. Right, we'll start hoofing it, we'll move it around. And yeah, it'll work against teams below us, but like, you know, we've no plan B against Rovers, we've no plan B against Derry. So, you know, it's a funny season, it is a funny season, but I think that, you know, it will fall on Clancy's lap to fix it. And if it doesn't, I think he'll pay the price, unfortunately.
Thomas, brilliant call. Thanks so much for coming on.
No worries, thanks for having me on, lads. And sorry again for being a bit late.
Not at all. Great man. Thanks very much. Gary, we'll move on and talk Stephen Bradley. Our Twitter has been blowing up all day. We reposted the discussion that Dan McDonald was having on Off the Ball this morning where I thought he made some brilliant points. A lot of people have been saying, why would Bradley step down to League One? That's a huge step down. And then Dan went on to the show and he explained why that clearly isn't the case. This is a club that has a £5 million playing budget. Their average attendance is about 8,000 or 9,000. You know, it's a club with a big history. They haven't been in the Championship for long, long, long time, but I don't think that's going to be the goal there. I don't know what the goal will be. Is he going in there to just keep them up? Because the last manager did that and he's moving on. So what was the issue there? Was the style of play? We don't know, but I'm sure that's the discussion Stephen Bradley will be having with Lincoln to decide whether he takes this job or not. But from a League of Ireland title race perspective, I'm looking at this two ways. Me and you, I think it's fair to say, and any of the regular listeners will know, we have doubts about Stephen Bradley. So if he was to leave Shamrock Rovers, does someone come in there and maybe you get even more out of the squad that's there? Because as we know, it's an incredible squad and I don't think they're reaching their full potential at the moment. But the other side of that, if he leaves, is there a bit of disarray for a couple of weeks? They're searching for a new manager out of nowhere, and maybe even the potential for Bradley to take a couple of the star players with him come the summer. So there's a lot to consider there. If you were a Shamrock Rovers fan, would you be worried?
Oh, you have to be worried. I don't think any Rovers fan that isn't worried about this is living in the real world. Whatever you might feel about Bradley, like, it's one thing to like lose your manager, but I think a key point that you mentioned was how many players would he take with him? I know it's a different level of football, but surely to God he'd take some of his, you know, higher performers with him. Like, could he take Jack Byrne with him, for example? Those are concerns that Shamrock Rovers fans are now have to look at and go, well, it's one thing losing Stephen Bradley, but we've a great squad. But is he going to lift a few players off us at the same time? That has to be a huge concern. It'd be a huge concern if I was a Shamrock Rovers fan. And then the next question is who comes in? Who replaces Stephen Bradley? Like, I think I see someone put up the odds of who. I think Robbie Keane is the favourite to come in at the moment, which is, well, look, he knows the club inside and out. He's training half the teams there at the minute. And then I think Damien Duff is number two. Like, what's that? Like, I don't really know. Like,
just for comedy value, that would be fantastic alone, given that he's declared he will never manage any other League of Ireland team. Let's put it to the test. It would be great to see.
Oh, it'd be class. And look, it'd really feed into the old madness of the league that we all love and enjoy. But it'd be... even aside from those two lads, who else is there?
His name shouldn't be near it anyway. Look, we'll come to Shells later on, but I said on the show last week you've kind of not agreed with me, but I think you're coming towards my way of thinking now. Duff should be under more pressure for the performances at Shells this season. But look, it's an interesting question. If there is any Shamrock Rovers fans listening, who on earth would be in line for this job? I'd imagine this news has come as a big surprise to Rovers, so I wouldn't imagine they have a few on speed dial, they're ready to go. So it'll be interesting to see how they would react. And as we said, who would follow Stephen Bradley if he is to make the move? But
well, like, is there someone that, like, just is there someone within the club that can step up? I think I saw Trevor Crawley in the running as well. Like, surely, I don't think too many Shamrock Rovers fans would be delighted to see that.
Well, I seen a tweet today, and someone was asking, it may have even been a Bose fan, saying, you know, a year ago, if this was to happen, Keith Long would probably be a shoo-in for that job. Now, after both started the season, maybe not so much, but very, very interesting. There's a few options on the table there. But look, just to round off on this game, Sligo 1, Rovers 1, we have a tweet in there from James O'Toole, and he says, that Showgrounds pitch is the worst I've seen in many years. Not great for any kind of football to be played on. As for the idiot with the flair, something needs to be done before someone gets seriously injured. Look, I'm kind of blue in the face talking about that now on the show, aren't we? The issues with flares and fan behaviour at certain games. We're another week on again from the Dublin Derby. Still, we've talked about Bray earlier on the show not releasing a statement. What happened to Wexford the other day? Still no FAI statement on that Dublin Derby and the behaviour of Shamrock Rovers fans. So, I'm really just getting sick of talking about it now at this stage. As James said, is it going to take someone to get seriously injured before something happens? For anyone that isn't aware, a cameraman had to be removed from his position at the Showgrounds the other day because he had a flare thrown right over his head. One set of fans trying to lob a flare into the other section of fans. So really, really poor stuff to see.
I think I said it in a pre-season pod. I think the FAI have done damage to themselves. Not damage to themselves. They couldn't do any more damage. But I think they've reduced their options by going to, say, in Shamrock Rovers fans or Shamrock Rovers, that game is behind closed doors. I think that would have set the fear of God into to a lot of other people. Now, I will say one thing. You'd have to question these lads throwing flares and stuff like that. That wasn't really a huge issue a few years ago. I don't think. Would you agree with that?
as in throwing them onto the pitch and throwing them at other supporters and that. Is that what you mean? Yeah, flares have been around for the last 20 years.
No, I'm aware of that, but I don't think like a few flares, that's grand. Like
yeah,
it wasn't like, oh geez, I might get this lobbed at me.
But that's actually something that's spreading, and they're talking about this a lot in English football at the moment. Objects been thrown onto the pitch, and they're having a massive issue with that in French football. There's been games abandoned crazy. This season.
Yeah.
So I don't know where that's come from, but it's something that is unfortunately spreading through football. Is it a result of the lockdown and people have just totally lost their minds? I don't know. But it's something that has unfortunately crept into our game here now. And it's very, very serious. And I'm not seeing the serious reaction that's required. And that's my biggest issue with this.
Yeah, that's my point. I think because the FAI stepped back from forcing Shamrock Rovers to have a game without any fans at it, I think they've kind of limited themselves. Like, okay, a player got hit with a firework down in the RSC. That's probably the most, you know, worst thing that has happened, even up to date. So the fact that that resulted in a fine, how can they come along and say, right, you know, I don't know who, like,
what's what do you have to do for worse than the fine? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
The bar has been set extremely low by the FAI.
And not only that, like, I don't want to harp on about Bowes, but if you bring it back to what Bowes, that's mental, ridiculous statement that they put out last week after the Dublin Derby. Oh, well done to their fans for not reacting to the incendiary, I think they call it incendiary, stuff from the Shamrock Rovers backroom staff. Like, you know, it's like you're talking to, I'm not saying Bowes fans are, you know, idiots or anything like that, but like, I said it last week, if I was a Bulls fan and my club released a statement like that, I'd be fuming. It's like, what do you think I am? Some crazed animal.
Yeah.
Can't control himself from a bit of rising from your biggest rival. Like, it's crazy. But do you think there's an element of where we're taking away responsibility of fans to behave themselves with statements like that?
There was a sense of that, yeah.
But like, I think fans need to, you know, I said it many times before, I think that stuff needs to be crowded out by the fans themselves. If you have some scut going around with a flare that you don't know or you haven't seen before, like, these aren't real fans. Let's be honest about it. Like, I wouldn't count these lads as real fans at all. So to see this rubbish go on, I'm not really sure how it's resolved. I think, like, would these clowns be that bothered if they couldn't go to a match? That would just mean that they have more flares for the final match. Mm. Do you know what I mean? I'm not like, who are you really impacting? But maybe, look, it might be the kick up the ass that clubs need to maybe do better searching or something like that on the way into games. I'm not sure.
We'll move on to the Louth Derby, Dundalk, with a comprehensive 4-1 win against Drogheda. Herself was at this one, and she reliably informs me that Dundalk played Drogheda off the park, that they smashed them around Oriel. A couple of goals from Dara Leahy. Good to see as well, because I was at the last three Dundalk games before this, and I thought Leahy was one of their worst players in those games. So it's good to see him bouncing back to a bit of form. Patrick Hooban on the score sheet. Another goal for John Martin after his late winner against Shells recently. And Ryan Brennan with the consolation goal for Drogheda. But Drogheda, they had a good little run of form going, but they are brought crashing back down to earth here by their Louth rivals.
Yeah, look, it's going to be an up and down season for Drogheda. I think all they want is to stay in the division at this point. You know, it's always the second season up in the division that's the most difficult one. You know, they did very well last year, but as we see with a lot of clubs, they're better players that come up with a team, they're picked off by bigger teams in the division or maybe more established teams in the division. And this is just another example, like, they did lose a good few players. So I think this is going to be probably a semi-regular occurrence. I'd be concerned with the amount of goals that they're conceding, though, as well.
24 in 13 games. That is concerning.
Yeah, like, I know they took a 4-0, 4-1 beating there.
That's the second worst record after UCD.
Oh, there you go. Like, that's, you could do it really getting a hold of that. That'd be priority number one, because I think we said it a few weeks ago when they had lost a game in like two or three or four games or something like that.
Yeah.
And they had stopped conceding a lot of goals.
They admit themselves hard to beat.
Yeah, exactly. And to get away from that type of good behaviour is concerning. So that'd be priority number one for Kevin and Dara up there.
Looking at the top four now after that result, Gary, is Derry on the top, Rovers second, Dundalk third, Sligo fourth. How do you see the top four now after, well, we're 13 games into the season? We're about a quarter of the way through the season. Obviously, the top two, we expected them to be there. Dundalk, I thought going into the start of the season, if they could creep into the top four, they'd be happy. But at the moment, I can't see any reason why they can't finish. Certainly, they're in third at the moment. I wouldn't expect them to finish any lower than fourth. I know they've drawn an awful lot of games, but you know, we haven't been overly impressed with Sligo. We've had the Paps caller on there. He's outlined their issues. Now, they could still come good, obviously. Bowes could still come good, but who knows? And then below that, obviously, you've got Drogheda, Shelburne, Hearts, and UCD. So I think Dundalk bang in the mix for a European spot at the moment. I know we've got a good few Dundalk listeners there at the moment. So lads, if feel free to hop on and give us your thoughts on Dundalk. 13 games into the new season, 5 wins, 6 draws, and just the 2 defeats, which is probably the most impressive thing. I mean, if they just turned a couple of those draws into wins, they wouldn't be that far off the top two at all. It's been a really good start for Dundalk.
Yeah, it is. But like, look, if Longford Town didn't concede 4 goals on Friday, they would have won the game. Like, you know, ifs and buts are a waste of time. But I think there was at one point they had like 1 win and 5 draws or something like that earlier on. Like,
yeah.
They've turned that around, thankfully, and turned those results into wins, which is what they needed to do. I would be inclined to agree with you. I think as time goes on and players and Stephen O'Donnell are getting more comfortable with their lineup and their formation and how they're attacking games, I can see them staying there. I don't think they'll breach the top two remotely.
But they look solid as well, Dundalk. I mean, they've got the joint second best defensive record. They've only conceded 10 goals. I think Connolly has been a brilliant, brilliant signing. He looks a really, really good player. They definitely look a little bit weak in the fullback areas, but the goalkeeper has really grown into it as well, Shepherd. I think they're lacking a bit in the middle now after Benson's injury, but they've got good options going forward. So I think if they can get some more bodies in the summer, I definitely don't think there's any reason that they can't finish at the minimum fourth at worst.
Yeah, no, I've been trying to agree with you. I don't think, you know, I'm going to go back to what I expect from Sligo Rovers. Yes, they've got a good few results after that little bit of bad form, but I can see that happening again to them. I'm not convinced with their squad and the depth of their squad that they can dig games out when they're in a difficult run of form. I'm not really sure if they'll be able to do that handily, and you know, as we talked about, the Pats issues at the moment. So I think fourth at the minimum for Dundalk is what they'll be aiming for.
Yeah, and after all the upheaval there, that'd be a great first season for Stephen O'Donnell. And look, Dundalk don't need any more strikers. They've got Hooban and they've got McMillan there, but I see our good friend Gary Shaw listening, and of course they did try to sign him from Longford Town once upon a time. Quite a compliment. I think Stephen Kenny was willing to fork out a good bit of change, but he ended up going over to Shamrock Rovers in the end.
Yeah, I think they were offering a couple of $100,000 for him, weren't they?
I think I remember reading in the paper they were offering 10,000 anyway at the time, but Longford were fighting relegation, so they decided to keep a hold of him.
Oh, jeez.
And he went to Rovers for nothing then, so we missed out on a few grand.
Missed out on a few grand, but I think that bought us another year in the league, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, he got two big goals over in Drogheda, didn't he, to keep us up?
Yeah, good times. But sure, look.
Who knows? We could see him in the red and black yet this season. Who knows?
Oh, there you go. There you go. I'd be more than welcome.
Gary,
back.
Tell us where you're going.
Yeah.
yeah, brilliant stuff. Look, we'll move on to the final game of the Premier Division before we get stuck into our predictions. But what a massive result this was for Finn Harps. A 1-0 win against Shells. Barry McNamee with the goal. And that makes it very interesting down at the bottom now. Brilliant goal. Yeah, Harps now 6 points clear of UCD, so they'll be pleased to be putting a bit of daylight between themselves and the automatic relegation spot. But they're only 2 points behind Shells now, and they're only 3 behind Drogheda. So they've breathed a bit of life now into their survival chances in terms of getting out with that playoff spot, because I think a lot of people were starting to write off Harps that they were just going to finish in that ninth. But they've given themselves a good chance now.
Well, they've given themselves a good chance. You know, I'm really flip-flopping between Shelburne and Harps here. Perhaps their two wins have come against Shelburne.
Yeah, Shells need the win though desperately. We'll get to it now, as I said, we were going to discuss this. I've been saying for a long time now, Duff needs to be under more pressure than he's under. And every time I say that, Shells fans come back, he hasn't got the squad. This man came in, he dismantled the squad that was there through his own choice. He brought in the players he wanted. That is his squad. He has to live and die by this squad.
Yeah,
it's great that he can get to the summer window and he'll get the chance to make reinforcements. Other managers might not be given that chance. I think Damien Duff should be under a lot more pressure than he's under, not only because of the results, the crap style of football they're playing as well.
Oh, it's woeful stuff. I think what's concerning is the fact that Jack Moylan is so relied on. I don't think he was playing at the weekend, was he? Don't quote me on that now. But like the players that they brought in,
Carr up front and
Boyd, like Jesus,
two very inconsistent performers,
100%, and that's really concerning. I think the goals,
and you know all the talk about Moylan, yeah, he's looked great, but he still hasn't scored this season. So,
but not
where's
only
the goals going to come from?
But not only that, Jack Moylan, he came up, he was unknown with from Bowes to Wexford, yeah. And he had a great season. And now he's like, right, we're going to place all this responsibility on you to be the creative outlet and try and get us a few goals or create a few goals. Dan Carr has one goal this season from the penalty spot.
Yeah.
Like, that's just not, that's dirt, like. I'm very concerned with how, you know, I think he'll definitely get to the summer break and he will get the opportunity to bring in players. But he has to really get it right because, as you said, he dismantled that squad and he brought in a load of players. It hasn't fully worked.
You can tell me they'd be worse off now with the likes of Michael O'Connor and Ryan Brennan in that team.
I don't think you could, no. No, and I really don't rate Michael O'Connor.
No, either do I, but you can't tell me they'd be in a worse position.
I'm not sure you would be, or they would be.
So I don't buy this thing. This is the squad that he has. This is his squad.
Oh, this is all his own doing, 100%. Yeah. And I think Shells fans probably kind of need to be a bit more realistic about Duff going forward as to, right, yes, he set up a new squad or whatever, but this, as you said,
two idiots like us in pre-season, we were talking on this pod, the massive imbalance there was, the lack of forward options. There was lots of time going into the season to address this. Maybe he couldn't find the players he wanted, I don't know, but he needed to get more attacking players into that team. And
how did he even find? How did he even find Dan Carr?
He was playing down at an extremely low level of English football last season.
Yeah. But how did he know he was there? How did he, like, you know, obviously someone told him that he used to play. It was the Rovers he played for, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was so never like, prolific there either. He was a hard worker, but he wasn't prolific.
Oh, no, but Shells only, they're nothing but hard work. Do you know what I mean? I'm not sure if there's enough quality there.
No, there's no quality.
Drag them out of it. So unless Damien Duff brings in a big player or a big, you know, couple of good players in the summer break, I think they're going to be trading blows with Finn Harps the rest of the season. I do want to highlight though, Finn Harps have two wins this season, both against Shells, but Shells are picking up results from other teams. You know, they're picking up points from teams that aren't around.
Look, to give Duff his credit, what he has there, he has organised them well and they are hard to beat. Wouldn't be my type of football, but they're a newly promoted team, I suppose. As you said, they're getting the results. If they keep them up, they'd be happy enough with that. But I'd be worried as a Shells fan. Two games against Harps, hammered in the first one, and they were hammered so badly in that I thought that had to be a blip, that had to be an off night. But to go and lose then in the manner they did against Harps the other night up in Ballybuffet, very, very concerning.
Yeah, it seemed like they were happy with a draw from the get-go.
But that was exactly the same when they went to Oriel. Now, look, I know they're not much higher up the pitch, but show some ambition. Have a counter-attacking plan. There was none of that.
Yeah, that's what's concerning. I'm not sure, does that show the limitation of Duff? You know, he's early on in his career as a manager. You know, can he do these things to, as you said, like we'll say, for example, a counter-attacking plan. They're going to sit in against most teams. how can they maybe pull out a goal out of somewhere? But look,
they've only scored 3 more goals than UCD. That says it all.
Oh yeah, of course. But like, look, that's what the summer transfer window is for. I think he'll need to get rid of. Maybe would he have to get rid of some players? Maybe I'm not too sure.
I don't think so.
It certainly have. But like, what is Dan Carr offering the team at the minute?
But even we touched on it earlier on in this season. We looked at the midfield, Coyle and Darvin playing alongside each other. There's only room for one of them, unless you're going to play a different formation where you have 2 holding players. Perfect. Put the 2 of them in front of the back 4. But as you said, there's a huge over reliance on Moylan. There needs to be someone. I don't think Darvin and Coyle work together. I think you need one of them sitting. You need someone then more box to box. I think they're both more defensively minded, the 2 of them. The team is just too defensively set up. But look, he's working with what he's got. But again, I don't think that's an excuse. He's the one that built that squad. So look, we'll move on. We're going to get stuck into our predictions for the weekend, Gary, starting with the Premier Division.
Hello. Oh, sorry.
Thomas, come ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, I just wanted to ask you just really, really quickly because, Gary, I know like you were adamant there a while back that Longford Town would win the first division. And I'm not like trying to have a go here.
No.
Stick the knife in.
Yes.
I'm asking just from a footballing point of view, like with the results he's had, the back-to-back, you know, losses and stuff and the playoffs. I know it's very early in the league, looking more likely. If it came down to a playoff between Longford Town and Shells for the Premier, would you be confident in Longford Town winning?
That's an interesting one.
Been there, wore the T-shirt.
Look,
no,
I know,
and that's, I know, like, he's done it before, but I mean, I've got to obviously see a lot more of, I was at the Shells game, the opening game with Pats and stuff like that now. And I do watch a bit of Longford Town myself, one of my good friends, a big Longford Town fan. And I just think with the way things are going, like, you know, Damien Duff must wake up every morning and thank God Finn Harps are in the league.
Yeah.
Like, you made a great point there, lads, about how Finn Harps have beaten Shells and Shells have gotten results. But we all know in the League of Ireland, luck does not last. Like, I mean, it really doesn't. And just from too long for town, man, it'd be good to, you know, you obviously know the team much better than me. You know the philosophy and the style of football. So, like, you know, if it came down to it, would you just fancy Longford Town beating Shells in a playoff?
You go first, Gary.
No, actually. And I'll tell you why. A couple of years ago, I think there was a totally different environment with it being in COVID. I think the way that the team set up and the way Longford approached the playoffs at that particular point was unheard of. And then, you know, you had all that baggage, a good baggage, let's say, from the games or the whole league being messed up with COVID. So you had that, like, togetherness. And yes, they fell into the playoffs, but you know, to come back from almost losing against UCD and then beating Galway handily enough and then coming up against Shelburne, I think that really it was perfect for Longford Town to win that game. The difference here is Longford Town are playing better football than probably they played under Dara Doyle and Neil Fenn at the moment, but they're not able to. The grittiness isn't there yet, I don't think. And the stubbornness, like I'll say, Kieran messaged me on Friday that we should be beating Cork. And it was 1-1 at half time. We went on to lose 4-1. Same again, Longford should have been 4 or 5 up at half time against Galway and they end up losing 2-0. That's a concern.
I wouldn't be so worried about the grittiness, Gary, because they showed their grit in the game in Bray when they scored the late winner. And there's been games this season where they've had to dig in. I think of the game, I know they conceded a late equaliser, so it's probably contradicting what I'm saying, but I thought they went down to Waterford and put in a good performance and they had to suffer at times in the game and they almost got through. So I wouldn't agree with the greatness. My biggest concern would be, and you make great points there, I actually never took them into account really, the whole environment would be very different in the playoffs this time. And if you did have to go to somewhere like Talca, or even if it's in a Dublin venue, you know, Shells are going to have a massive crowd behind them. Or if you had to go to Ballybuffet, it's going to be very difficult with a home crowd there. The one thing that worried me at the moment would be just sticking the ball in the back of the net. Longford are having the lion's share of possession in most of their games. I mean, they played Treaty a couple of weeks ago. They had 68% possession. They made 505 passes in the game. They didn't score. Didn't create that many clear-cut opportunities either. Treaty, who sat in and really just came to get a draw, they actually nearly had the better chances in the game on the break and through mistakes. So that's what's worrying me. They created chances in the first half against Galway, but they didn't create much in the second half the other day. Likewise in Cork, they missed a great chance at the start of the second half, but they played all, the football in the first half in Turners the other night was unbelievable. To go down there and play the way they did, I was like, wow, this is unbelievable football from Longford. And I think it really took the Cork fans by surprise as well. But again, we only scored one goal. So that would be my concern, Thomas. If we did get into a situation like that, I don't think we're going to stick the ball in the net enough. But hopefully, again, Longford are going to look to beef up the squad in the summer, I think. So hopefully that's something they can rectify going forward.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. If I myself would fancy getting a playoff versus Shells, I just think, like you said, Kieran, I think the problems with Longford at the moment are just down to a little bit of game management. Like, you know, I know the 4-1 against Cork, it doesn't really reflect the game, does it? When I think three of the goals came in the last 10 minutes or something, you know, or something like that. I can't really remember. But I just to give an own opinion on that, I think if it came down to one game, you know, biggest bottlers in the history of the world, Shelbourne Football Club. So,
oh, I think we'd all love it. Make no mistake. The league as a whole.
Yeah. Like, I mean, to see Damien Duff, Shelbourne losing, you know, to play in Damien Duff's first division again would be fantastic, you know.
Oh, Jesus. Well, Thomas.
He might have skirted out long before then, I think. But look, Thomas, we'll let you go again. Thanks for coming back.
Cheers, lads. Thanks.
Not at all. Great to have you. We are going to try and get this wrapped up before the Champions League tonight. So let's get stuck into these predictions, Gary. UCD against Dundalk. You going to this one?
I think so.
Good stuff.
I was going to do a bit more hammering in some more cable in Bishopsgate. But I can't.
I'll send you up a Dundalk jersey. You can wear it along.
You'll never see that again. It'll be into the first skip. No, I think I think you're going to have to look at Dundalk. UCD are just not good enough. So I'm going to go 3-0 Dundalk.
3-0 Dundalk. I'm not going to spend too long on this one. I think Dundalk will beat them comfortably 2-0 in Oriel. I'd be surprised if it's not a similar scoreline here. I'll go 2-0 to Dundalk. We'll move on. Derry against Bowes. Bowes got the win against UCD, take a little bit of pressure off. Ooh. But this is a proper test now, up to the brandy well. Derry are absolutely flying. With the reports Lincoln Bradley would have moved away, Derry will be thinking, let's put some pressure on. Something happens, let's hope we have a bit of a gap and we can capitalise on it. So big game for both teams here. How do you see it playing out?
I think, unfortunately, it being up in the Ryan McBride Brandywell, I think it's going to be a long night for Bowes, long trip home as well. Excuse me, I'm going to go 2-0 Derry.
2-0 to Derry. Let's have a look now. Yeah, McGonagall in great form. Bowes, well, no, I know they won 3-0, but they weren't overly convincing last time out. I think it'll be a Derry win. But Derry have deceived us a couple of times this season. They had those two games where, who was it, against Drogheda, they had the draw and they were beaten by Shelburne up in the Brandywell. So these kind of upsets do happen from time to time. So I'll go a little bit more cautious than you, but I'll go for Derry win. I'll go 2-1. Moving on, I'm sure Thomas is listening eagerly to this one. Drogheda against Pats. It's the Tim Clancy derby.
The Tim Clancy derby. I think this is going to be... this is going to be a tough one here. I think Drogheda need to be targeting this game based on the form of Pats and the kind of, you know, you're not really sure what you're going to get with Pats. It's going to be very difficult, I'd say, for Kevin Doherty to see how Pats are going to set up. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw here. Do you think
Drogheda will be targeting 3 points here, or would they be happy to set up and take a point?
I think every point is important here. They just need to stay away from the three teams below them. Anything at all to that end is going to be fine. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw here. Maybe Chris Lyons to get a goal.
Yeah, I like your prediction. I'll follow it. 1-1 tight pitch in Drogheda, as we know. So I think Drogheda will be very compact and make it difficult for Pats on the night. So we'll go 1-1. Shells against Sligo.
This is a tough one here. I think I'll let you go first. You're fond of letting me go first all the time.
Thank you. This is a tough one. This is probably one of the harder ones in the Premier Division this weekend to call.
Yeah.
Shelburne coming into this one off the back of a really poor defeat against Finn Harps. Sligo, they'll take encouragement from the draw against Shamrock Rovers. They'll be without Gary Buckley here through suspension, but I think Sligo definitely have enough to go up to Talca. Despite the fact Shells, you know, they've had woeful start of the season at home. It's still not a nice place to go. The fans here, Shells, will be expecting that home win to come sooner rather than later. So, yeah, it's going to be a test for Sligo. But I think another draw on the cards here, Gary. Two teams, Sligo play quite direct, which is quite surprising for a Buckley team. And Shells, they just don't get forward that much, do they? So I think they're going to go for a 0-0 draw here.
Oh, God.
No, I don't like predicting 0-0s too often, but I could see this being a low-scoring affair, definitely.
No, I'm going to give Sligo a break here. I think he's going to win this 1-0.
Okay, interesting one. Who's going to get the goal for Sligo?
Who knows? Jeez, I couldn't tell you. It'd be great if Bulger scored a goal.
Rovers against Harps.
I'm not. I don't think that the jibber jabber this week will have too much of an impact. Now, who knows what will happen? You know, it's probably going to be too quick to like. I think the League One only finished there the other day, isn't that right?
Yeah,
Sunday. So I'm not sure he'll
be given time, I'm sure, to mull it over.
Well, sure he hasn't been offered it yet. No, I think this is going to be business as usual for Rovers. Yeah. I'm going to go 2-0. Can Aaron on 3-0. No, 3-0. 3-0 Rovers.
You're going 3-0?
I am.
I'll go 2-0 because the last couple of times I robbed scorelines off you, it worked out nicely. So, the big pitch up in Talla, be difficult for Harps just to sit in and try and frustrate Rovers. So
just on that, how the way people are going on a tight pitch as if it's like a five-a-side pitch up in United Park, and then Rovers is the size of a GA pitch. I don't think the pitches are that much different. You know what I mean?
Draw is definitely tight. It's a tight pitch. It's definitely that bit.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it is, but. Oh, narrow on the sides. For who else would it be narrow? I just don't. It'd be interesting to see the actual measurements, because I was actually speaking to Longford Town groundsman years ago when Ireland were playing in Croke Park, and I said, "Geez, the size of this pitch is absolutely massive," and he goes, "It's only 2 yards longer than Bishopsgate and a yard wider."
It's the surroundings, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. It's not as if it's, you know, 5 yards more narrow or shorter or anything like that. So
still, if I'm a fullback and I have one less yard against, you know, a pacey winger like you know, Gaffney or whoever's running at me, even Andy Lyons bombing on fullback.
Rory Gaffney is pacey, is he?
he's still for a fellow that's getting on, he's still quick enough.
He's tipping on, yeah.
Or even Aaron Green there, still plenty of terrible behind him. You know, if I have 1-2 yards less to me left or right hand side to cover, then I'm happy enough with that. So, yeah, interesting point. We'll move on to the first division games. Athlone against Cork. I would say you can only look one way, but Athlone frustrated Waterford for long periods, didn't they? But, different task now with Cork coming down, the amount of goals they're scoring this season.
Oh yeah, no question about this. 3-0 Cork.
They've scored even more goals than I thought. 31 in 13 games. Now they got, what, 6 on the opening day against Bray, but that's very, very impressive.
Oh, it is. It is, but I said that Longford are going to win the league. I think that this weekend,
as well, probably 14 points off them, I think.
Jesus.
Two games in hand, but still.
Yeah, I just think this weekend has been so damaging to Longford Town's chances.
Who is going to win it then?
I think Cork have to win it.
Yeah. Waterford obviously could still come good.
They won't. I don't see it. They're getting results and stuff like that, but as time goes on, the manager issue it will probably become more important. I don't see it working in the long term. Not to say that the current setup isn't satisfactory. The fact that it's an interim setup just won't work. You know, as the season goes on. I'm going to go 3-0 Cork in this game.
Fair enough, 3-0 Cork. Yeah, just on who might win the first division, I have to agree with you on Cork because they've just been remarkably consistent. But I actually seen Galway tweeted it after they beat Longford. This is Galway's best ever start to a season, and it really is the eighth wonder of the world, isn't it? I have no idea how Galway are up there because that is not football they're playing.
Yeah, I think I mentioned it before on one of the late night, the off the ball things. When I was on, I said Longford Town are playing the best football in the league, and I'd still stand by that.
They are 100%.
But I think Nathan was the chap's name. He made the point: does it really matter if you're playing dirt football?
I couldn't look at that every week. And a Galway fan said to me, "Oh well, you don't want to be watching winning football." Fair enough. I couldn't look at that. That's puke ball what Galway are playing. As I said, with Cork, at least they've got a few individual players who, if I go out there, I might see a fella beat three or four lads and stick it in the top corner. But with Galway trying to burst the ball every time, just look. I'd say Conor Kearns must have lumped it out of his hands straight through to Luke Dennison a good four or five times the other night.
Yeah.
Down in Galway. It's so poor to watch.
It is so poor. And like, look, that game in particular, that Fortuna-Dusseldorf game I was at on Friday. Yes, their reserve teams are like kind of under 23s, but I don't think it's that strict. They're more of a reserve team. They were still trying to play a lot of football. There was a couple of really good standout players particularly for Cologne, the Cologne Bean team, and you know they're all trying to get into the first team and get like a long term professional contract, which is fine. But the approach to the game, yes, there was a bit of long ball stuff, but it was a good mix, do you know what I mean? Whereas you mentioned Galway, it's hoofing it all the time.
Yeah, I actually spoke to a League of Ireland coach recently. I won't say what club it was, but we were talking about the First Division. I was just saying how disappointed I am with the standard of play. I've seen very few teams actually want to get it down and pass the ball. And we're talking about Galway, and he said, my team will never play like that. He says, I would rather not coach than play the way Galway play.
Yeah, and that's fine, but is that coach still coaching?
Yeah.
They're a League of Ireland team at the minute.
Yeah.
Well, and how is that team doing? Good or bad?
Doing all right. But look, as you said, Galway will be... John Coffey will say at the end of the year, yeah, well, I'm looking down at you from the Premier Division, so...
I know that, and look... I don't think I'm a football purist. I go to a lot of football because I just like it. But some of the stuff that Galway are playing, like thankfully I've only had to see them once this year. Is not an approach in football they're playing.
No.
I said that about they're not. It's not style. That's not style. Dirt. But at the end of the day, they're second. They're getting wins. They're doing exactly what they need to do. They had a scare against Treaty last Friday night. They still won the game. So we can talk about style and approach and great, football and all of this stuff. It doesn't really matter if teams aren't winning.
It's amazing as well how earlier on the season when they were had a couple of draws there, we were hearing some whispers from Galway fans, oh, we're getting sick of this Caulfield style of football. That's all gone away again. So it really is a results game. I'm going to go 2-0 to Cork against Athlone. We'll move on. Bray against Waterford. We already touched on what the atmosphere might be like at this one. Waterford, they'll be looking at this one and saying we need to play a lot better than we did against Athlone. And look, Bray will just be looking for a typical Bray result, either a 0-0 or a 1-0 win or whatever they can pull out of the bag. But they're sitting third bottom at the moment, Bray. And I don't think anyone could argue that's exactly where they deserve to be as well. Just two wins all season.
Yeah, and one of them against Longford Town. God bless us. I'd be annoyed about that one for years, actually.
That's how I feel about the Galway game the other day.
Oh, good. Well, at least we're all miserable. I'm gonna go 1-1 here.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why. Who knows what you're going to get from Bray at all? Will there be fans there at all? Who knows? Who knows what will happen between now and Friday?
They haven't won in their last five, have they?
Don't think so, no. Who was that? Did they beat Wexford? Was it 1-0 or something like that?
Let me have a quick look.
Oh, you should have this off.
I know, I should, you know, off the top of my head. Was the last one was hardly the game against Longford, was it? It was. Last one was the win over Longford.
Oh, dear God. Jesus.
Imagine they've only played 3 games since then. It seems a lot longer ago. I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong Longford game. Yeah, sorry, that is the wrong. That's the one we won. I'm looking at Arseways there.
Wouldn't be like it.
Bray's last win. Bray's last win was against Cove on the 18th of March.
Over a month ago. Ah, no, I think we'll get a 1-1 draw here.
Okay. Yeah, just concerned me the way Waterford struggled to beat Athlone last time out, but they had gone to Wexford and put in a great performance the week before. Maybe they're better on the road. Maybe they're better on the road. I'll side with them narrowly here for a 1-0 win. I don't see Bray getting anything out of this one. We'll move on. Cove against Galway.
1-0 Galway. Despite how much I hate it, I just think that they're going to keep tipping on. I'm not sure Cove will be able to put up much of a fight in this game. Well, look, whatever John Caulfield is doing, it seems to be working results-wise. So I think it'll just be more the same. Very poor enough game on show, I imagine. But I think this is just going to be another boar fest from Galway, and they'll. Oh, Stephen Walsh will probably score, and that'll be that. I'm sick even thinking about this game, and I won't be watching it.
I'll go 2-1 to Galway there. A couple of set pieces probably, but Cove they've been showing up all right. They're not getting the results against the teams higher up the league. Final game, Longford against Wexford. This has already developed into a huge game. Wexford are only, I think, a couple of points outside of the playoff places now, and Longford. You know, the title chances are gone already, so they're going to be looking to finish as high up them playoff places, there we go, as they possibly can. So, you know, 3-match winless streak for the town. They have to end it here. If they want to show they're going to be genuine promotion contenders, they have to show a bit of steel here and get a win, no matter if they have 100% possession, if they have 1% possession, they need to find a way to get the ball in the net and win this game.
A win is the only thing acceptable here whatsoever. I'm going to go 2-0 Longford. But this game there's pressure on this game for Longford Town. They need to win this game. There's no two ways about that.
Yeah, Wexford are still leaking. This is the perfect test of Longford, whether they can adapt. Because we're talking about this great football they're playing, but can they adapt and find different ways to play? Because they're coming up against a Wexford team here who are scoring goals themselves. We've seen that when they put 3 past Athlone recently, and they got a goal against Bray the last day. They'd probably be disappointed they didn't win that one, although Bray missed a penalty, as we mentioned. But this is a Wexford team still leaking goals. So Longford are going to be at home here. They're probably going to have most of the ball. They have to find a way of scoring a couple of goals here. It can't be another case of they have 80% possession and come away with a 0-0 or a 1-1. That they need to go and score a couple of goals here against this Wexford team, because Wexford are extremely leaky at the back.
Yeah, I don't even think a 1-0 win for Longford Town is acceptable here.
Well, I think Wexford have a good chance of getting on the score sheet with the attacking players they have. Well done to Denny Corcoran, by the way, recently getting his century up in the League of Ireland. You know, he'll be there. They've got other good attacking threats. I'd say Doherty will start this one. I think the last time Longford played Wexford, he was only on the bench. And when he plays, he really makes them tick. So Wexford will cause Longford problems, there's no doubt. But Longford need to go and score enough goals to put this game beyond doubt. They really need to be looking to score 2 or 3 here. I don't think it'll be that handy. I'm going to go for a 2-1 win for Longford. But as you said, I think you summed it up. Anything other than that just won't be acceptable.
No. Come here, a question for you. You know, you were going on about all these stats that you got for Longford Town. How many shots are they having? Are they having more or less shots than
the average in the league?
No, not even the average in the league. Like, do you think they should be having more shots based on the possession that they're having?
I don't have stats from all the games. I only got a handful of games where I got those kind of in-depth stats that I shared with you. But just as someone that's been at every game so far this season, that's a jab at you there for missing the last 2 games. But as someone that's been at every game, just from the naked eye, I don't think they're turning possession into enough raw chances.
Right.
And you touched on the treaty game before. You were saying, oh, Shane Elworth did an unbelievable shot. That was from 25 yards on the volley. That's not creating a chance inside the opposition penalty area. I don't think they're creating enough raw chances for the amount of possession they're having.
Well, that's a bit of homework for Gary Cronin if you're listening. Sure, we'll see you on Saturday. But
we'll see you Saturday and tell you the team and how to play and what to do. Don't worry.
Yeah, exactly.
We know it all.
Yeah, you can sit in the stand, guys. I just think a 1-0 win is fine, but I think Longford have to start banging in goals. Considering the amount of possession they have, we both believe that they're playing good football. Surely to God, they'll have to start bashing in a few goals at some point.
See, the lack of strikers is a problem. Sam Verdon's doing his best up there. I think he's a little bit isolated at times. We've touched on it. Warfield's injured. Christian's only making his way back. You have to be very careful with him. There's not a whole pile of striker options. You look at Wexford there and the amount of striker options they have. Now, some of them obviously weren't deemed good enough for Longford Town, but it'd be great if you had someone like a Denny Corcoran in that squad.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I don't know. I don't even know how to describe it. Like, there was a while there, I was like delighted to go to a town match because I was full sure that, or not full sure, but I was relatively confident it's three points.
Mm.
The last two games, obviously I haven't been to them, but you know, looking at the streams and stuff like that, or obviously as I said, didn't watch the Galway game, couldn't be doing with the picks a lot. I'd just be very concerned with the conversion, and even never mind the conversion, actually creating a decent chance.
Yeah.
That's very concerning for me at the minute, and until
I look, the squad is thin as well, and we knew it was thin. There's a couple of injuries now. There's a suspension from Menemy this weekend. He'd be a huge loss because he really makes Longford tick. So there's, you know, Longford need the window now as well. Like we talked about Shells earlier on needing the window. Longford really need the window there to beef it up.
Yeah, 100%. No, they brought Joe Doyle.
I think even I spoke to Gary Cronin for local radio after the game the weekend or on Monday against Galway, and he admitted there was players sitting on the bench that weren't fully fit.
Yeah, that's a concern. I think we questioned, like, if even you look back to last year, Conor Davis coming in to Longford Town, that was all right. Yeah, he certainly has some qualities, but you know, he was serious injury concern for a lot of the season. I don't think he could train that hard. So the fact that he was brought in was a concern for Longford Town last year. Now this is the same with Christian. He's only getting back to fitness. Like, I don't think, will he be able to start a game before the break?
No, I wouldn't say it.
Probably not. So even like, and that's not Christian's fault. That's just a fact of life. Where are Longford going to be able to bring on a player that might...
I've touched on it on commentaries this year. Gary Cronin, since he's come in, he's made very, very few changes. It's generally, unless there's an injury or a suspension, it's the same starting 11 every week, even two or three games in a week, same starting 11.
Mm.
Fatigue has to set in. They're a part-time team as well. They're not getting the same rest and recovery that the top three teams are getting. So that's a concern in itself, that he doesn't have the options that he feels he can go and make changes when you have two or three games in a row coming up.
Yeah, no, that's a very fair point, but you know, I think would you question how well did Gary do in the off season before the start of the season?
But we don't know the budget. We don't know the budget, so.
Oh no, we don't. But no, I'm just saying, like, you know, these are issues that, and you know, these are issues that managers have to resolve. Do you know
well,
I mean?
we could see the Shells were short on strikers. We said the same for weeks leading into the season with Longford, that they were light in the attacking areas.
Yeah. Look, I think it's just going to be difficult to see, you know, without players being brought in. I think the squad depth is going to be an issue for the town as the season goes on.
Yeah.
As more injuries pile up, maybe a couple of suspensions. But look, I think in a way, I'm kind of happy that suspensions are an issue. It means that we're actually cracking a few lads, and that was a big loss or big miss.
That was a silly red card the weekend.
Yeah, I know. So that's not great, but look, we'll see how it goes. We're going to only start again on Saturday, and hopefully Town score a few goals, and that can be the start of a bit of a revival.
Brilliant. Well, look, that brings us to the end of the show. We're all going to let you crack on and go and watch the Champions League game tonight. Thanks to Gary for joining me. Thanks to those of you that placed calls with us tonight and left tweets as well. We're going to make the Twitter Livespace available as a podcast later on, so we'll get this downloaded and we'll get it available as a pod. So if you missed any of it, don't worry, you'll be able to listen back to it. We'll be back next week with our normal podcast. We decided to do the Twitter Livespace this week because we're a little bit short on time. Obviously, Gary just arriving back from Germany, and I have a mad work schedule this week, so we thought the Twitter Livespace was the best way to go. So look, hopefully you enjoyed that. As I said, we'll be back next week. We'll have our big name interviews as ever on the show. We're working on some big names over the next while, just like you saw last week when we had the brilliant Mark Tye on. So I hope you're all still enjoying the podcast. You can subscribe to Between the Stripes LOI podcast wherever you get your podcast from. We're on the likes of Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, all the rest. You'll find us there, or you'll find the podcast on betweenthestripes.net. And if you're enjoying our overall content, because we're much more than a podcast, we've got the website there, we've got the social media and all the rest, then feel free to leave us a donation on buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI, and you'll find the link to that as well on our website, betweenthestripes.net. But to everyone that tuned in, to everyone that spoke to us and placed tweets, massive thanks. Hope you enjoyed the live space, and we'll speak to you again next week.
Thanks for listening. Check out betweenthestripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.